We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 395. Coming up on 400, Scott, the cold dust has settled. How you doing?
Yes, it has. I'm doing well. I'm back home after a long week of travel and just being kind of out of the loop. So happy to be home. Happy to get into this stretch before the holiday season. And then it's going to be spring training before you know it. I mean, literally, we're going to blink our eyes and we're going to be in Tampa. And hopefully I remember my luggage this time.
Yes, you're right. And the good news, at least for the Yankees and just, I guess, Major League Baseball in general, people don't have to sweat out the free agency for the next month and a half before spring training starts. Like, a lot of the big pieces have now signed, especially after Rendon signed later in the week. It's the major free agent players have got their contracts, and we don't have to talk about, is free agency broken for the next 6 weeks?
Yeah, but now we're going to be bored for the next 6 weeks because nothing's going to happen.
That's not true. There's still plenty of stuff to talk about.
I know, but the
and you know what?
We'll find things to complain about because of all the guys that have already signed too early, and now we got nothing to do in the month of January. It'll be a complaint.
It's going to be your problem in January because I'm going on my honeymoon in January, so I'm going to be gone for like two and a half weeks.
That's fine. I'll find something to talk about. We'll be good.
Well, you said spring training is right around the corner, March 14th. We are sold out on those tickets.
I mean, we were sold out, and then we acquired more tickets. So we have, actually, I think the last time I put anything out on Twitter was we have 130 tickets total. Those are all gone. And then I went to Tampa again. Literally, we're down to like their final. The capacity of this, of the bullpen club is 200. And right now we have 150 of them. So
they said we couldn't sell out 200 tickets. They said we couldn't fill it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was they just said that they had some people had already purchased, and what I think I was getting was they didn't believe that we were going to get to that number. So he's like, "Yeah, you know, I have this amount left." And now every time I ask him, he's like, "Oh yeah, I have some more left." I'm like, "What are you doing here? You told me that they were sold out. Just give me the rest of the tickets." Because that's where we're at right now. So yeah, but they're every time we raise the number, they get bought. So yeah, if you have not bought them, there are probably maybe 20 left of inventory that we have currently. So don't wait, get those tickets because they're going to be gone this week. They'll definitely all be gone.
Yeah, and you know, it's a great weekend to go. It's going to be fun. We have an after party planned for that day. We're going to be at the Friday game as well. So if maybe last minute you guys decide that you want to come down for spring training, make it that weekend. And then the first event of the year is May 9th. Then we have the Trenton event on the 13th of June. That's something different that we're doing. It's our first minor league takeover. And there's going to be a lot of different things going on with that other than your standard pregame and then game. There's going to be, I mean, because minor league baseball does sort of, you know, the dizzy bat and all these different things that you can get involved with, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to sort of be more part of
the game,
just the experience of a minor league baseball game. And I've never even been to a double A game. Have you been to a double A game?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I have.
I've only been to triple A. So
I've been to lower levels too.
I've been to Cape Cod league games.
I used to go to the New Jersey Cardinals games that were up in Sussex County. It's kind of
what
a cool
that?
Place. I think they were independent. I don't even think they were affiliated. Honestly, I have a pennant from the New Jersey Cardinals up on my wall. But they were
step up from high school.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool, though, because you drive up to it, and it was like it was literally in the cornfield. So you drive through the cornfield, and you get to the stadium, which was kind of neat. This was when I was younger, so I very well could be making up these memories, but I'm pretty sure
that's
accurate.
Are you sure you're not just remembering Field of Dreams?
No, I mean, I'm literally looking at the pennant, so I have it. It's there. They existed. That was a thing. Pretty sure they were in the cornfields, which was cool. But yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be opportunities to get involved with the Thunder game. So put that on your calendar. And then we have some marquee games after that, which is June 26th, a Friday, versus the Cubs. Cubs coming to town. That's going to be a fun series when that happens. And hopefully they still have a bunch of their players and not selling off by then. and Saturday, July 25th. Again, this is another Saturday Red Sox game. This is two that we're getting this year. unprecedented. Hasn't been done for a group this size, getting a Saturday marquee game against the Red Sox. So that'll be the second one. Hopefully this one's a night game so that we're not sitting in the dead of heat on July 25th. I'm thinking it's going to be a night game. Worst case scenario, we're looking at like 4 o'clock, right? So
was that the date of the, it was right, that was, I guess, that weekend last year when we had the 105 degree day.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, we've had a couple of these really hot days, but
yeah, nothing like the most recent one though.
The fact, well, yeah, the Aaron Judge debut game was, I'd still say is the hottest.
That's true. That wasn't an official.
That wasn't an event, but that was probably one of the hottest games I've ever been to. I mean, it was ridiculous that day. But and so July 25th is that Red Sox game, and then the final home game of the regular season that we're going to be doing is August 22nd versus the Blue Jays. So, and then we're going to fit in hopefully
those are all
September
in the
away game too.
And those are all in the show notes if you guys want to check it out, and also on the website.
They're not on the website yet. I need to do that. I've been
slacking. The first three are.
The spring training game is. I will get all of these events on the website this week.
Clearly, I haven't checked the website.
That is my promise. I shouldn't make promises. I really should.
Other stuff going up is the NYC hat that everyone asks about. Every time you do a video wearing the NYC hat, people are like, "Yo, where can I get that?"
Yeah, this is like the new. So this is something I'm very excited about. So going into 2020. You know, for those of you guys that follow this stuff, like a lot of the merchandise on the fan shop, like I do a lot of the design. I work with some illustrators and artists as well for some of the t-shirt things, for some of the t-shirt designs. But these hats have been kind of a pet project of mine, and got these NYC hats made. They're really good. They're awesome. Like the structure, the quality, I'm very excited about them. So I have initially 100 of them made. We're going to be putting them on sale this week. I will be able to get them out for you before Christmas. So that you'll have them before Christmas if you do want these hats. But they are going to be on sale this week. And then also, we made these top hat Savage beanies, which are the basically modeled after the Yankee logo top hat, which I'm also excited about. Got 100 of those that will also be on sale this week. So very limited edition for these. This is all first run stuff. And they will, when they're gone, they're gone. Like, that's it. So this week, look for those. I'll put them on sale, and then I'm going to turn around and get them out, you know, pretty quickly so that you guys have them before Christmas, if you want to give them as gift. So yeah, look for that. I'm excited about those getting out into the hands of you guys. So it's going to be fun.
Another promise.
That one for sure. I can land on that promise.
So
too many promises the week before Christmas. Damn. It's aggressive.
The Yankees got Gerrit Cole. We did that episode a couple days ago. If you guys missed it, go check it out. And then a couple, you know, less than 48 hours later, Brett Gardner was signed to a one-year, $10 million deal with another club option for $10 million and a $2.5 million buyout. So it's $12.5 million guaranteed to Brett Gardner, which I think is a little bit more money, AAV, than I thought he was going to get, than you thought he was going to get. But obviously, he had the career year for home runs last year, and he had leverage because Aaron Hicks is injured. So everything broke Brett Gardner's way for these negotiations.
It was also just a natural fit too, because there was no downtick in production. It was actually an uptick in production, and he stayed healthy. Like the guy that he normally stays healthy, but there's usually a breakdown.
Well, there's a decline in the second half because he gets banged up.
Yes. And we didn't see that very much. He was pretty consistent throughout.
Well, he actually got better as the season went on. And he got more productive as the season went on.
And the Yankees needed it. The Yankees needed him to be that guy, and he stepped up. So
he played far more games last year than the Yankees probably planned on him playing.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to do that again, at least until Hicks is back. And Aaron Hicks is not a guy that you can come to rely on for health. So, yes, his timetable is what it is. They're eyeing the second half return for him. But who the hell knows with Aaron Hicks, right?
Yeah. Like,
and that's what Brett Gardner that's what he was able to negotiate with. And there were reports that other teams had interest in him for multi-year contracts. I don't know if I believe that or not, if that's just floated. I never really saw Brett Gardner leaving for another team.
No.
The only way he would leave for another team, the only way I could see him leaving for another team is if the Yankees had absolutely no interest in him and told him that.
If they treated him like Didi and didn't offer him a one-year deal or didn't want to do it, then yes, he would probably go play for somebody else. Because he still wanted to play.
Yeah, he couldn't clearly still play.
No, I'm saying he still wanted to play as well. Yeah. Like, so there was a desire there to go out and play baseball. And if the Yankees didn't want, if that desire wasn't mutual, then yes, he would have gone and signed somewhere else. But
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So say Aaron Hicks doesn't have that arm injury, and he's on track for opening day. Does Brett Gardner get re-signed?
Yeah, I still think he gets re-signed. I think that there was when the production happened last year, and the fact that he really was no decline, and he's such a big part of this team as far as the clubhouse as well. Yankees are losing CeCe. They
losing Didi.
Losing Didi. Like, you can't just like demolish the chemistry in that clubhouse. You gotta keep some semblance of the makeup. And if you're getting rid of three core guys when it comes to makeup and clubhouse, you know, atmosphere and whatever, like, that's a big deal. And so yeah, I think you want to limit that.
At what point do you move on from?
Well, I mean, there was also a natural fit on the baseball field too, because even if Hicks isn't there, still has the injury history. If Hicks is not injured, still has the history of it.
Yeah,
and you need a guy that's flexible who could play center field.
So I posed the question. I wrote an article yesterday. What's left for the Yankees to do now that Gerrit Cole and Brett Gardner are signed? Because the roster, as far as the 26-man roster goes, is pretty set. Like, maybe backup catcher. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Maybe another bullpen arm. We're going to talk about Hader rumors or Betances in a minute. But the outfield, as nice as it looks on paper, Judge, Stanton, Gardner now, Talkman, and then Hicks for the second half of the season, I'm still nervous that it's going to just get decimated with injuries. All of those guys were injured at one point or another last year. I mean, I guess except Gardner, but Stanton out the entire year. Judge missed a significant time with the oblique. Hicks, obviously. And Talkman ended the season on the injured list. They all have injury question marks.
Yeah.
So the outfield could look
literally
thin.
If we're looking at it like that, the entire team has injury concerns because everybody was on the DL. Last year was such an anomaly with injuries. It's hard to say that it is what it is, because literally everybody got hurt.
Okay,
so,
but just look at the history beyond last year for these outfielders. Judge has had an injury in every season that he's been in the majors.
Yes.
Stanton has a lengthy injury history.
Yes.
Hicks, lengthy injury history.
Yeah, it's a concern. There's no doubt. I think the outfield more than the infield as well. But that's why they load up, and there is depth there now. I think there is depth. And I'm actually interested. You know, I think every year we've circled the year of, like, is Tyler Wade going to make a contribution? Well, we actually did see a contribution at the end of the season from Tyler Wade, and we saw value in him. He put together much better offensive at-bats as well. And the fact that he does have this flexibility to move in and out, I could definitely see him being used more as an outfielder as well, because of the athleticism and the fact that, you know, he can play center field as well. And they can move him around. Like, I know Mike Talkman's definitely the guy that's going to be the most flexible out there, as long as he's healthy, because Brett Gardner is still going to be 37 years old. Mike Talkman, if he can produce what they think that he is, if he can, you know, replicate something similar to the month of production that he had, and I'm not saying he needs to be that guy, but we saw, even you take away the offensive numbers in the
he's
month
a fantastic
and a half,
defensive outfielder.
Very good defensive guy, especially for a fourth, and he's flexible within the outfield. So I think Tyler Wade could be one of those guys, especially now that we're adding a roster spot. Is an interesting player.
Yeah,
to look
26th
at.
Man makes it interesting, because Tyler Wade is the ideal 26th man, because he can play infield and outfield, and he can steal bases. So maybe you don't want to waste a 25-man roster spot on that, but you got the extra for the 26th man.
And theoretically, now that we have Gerrit Cole, which is a reality, which is crazy because sometimes I forget, but now we have a guy on the front of the rotation who's you right now pencil him in for 200 plus innings. Like, that's a given, right? Like, that is a 200 innings is a minimum now that
knock
we're
on wood,
as
baby.
Far as expectations though. I'm knocking. But like, that is a very big piece to look at, because in the past, however many years, we haven't had that guy, and hopefully the Yankees will cooperate with that as far as their mentality and their strategy.
Oh my God, I will lose my goddamn
mind. So help me God, if they start pulling Gerrit Cole in the sixth inning, I'm gonna start losing my shit. But the that theoretically is also gonna help the bullpen depth as well.
And Severino is a guy that
can
in
do
past
that
seasons was a seven inning plus guy. He wasn't a let's get to the fifth or maybe sixth inning if we want to push it. Like, and you want to do that with Tanaka, I agree. You want to do that with Paxton. We saw that him succeed in that role last year. But if you have Cole and Severino, so it, you're not doing it 5 out of 5 days. You're doing it 3 out of 5 days with this Yankees bullpen. Now we're cooking with gas, baby.
And honestly, if you want to get into where my head and my expectations are for certain players, like, I think Paxton should be that guy too. Honestly, with a few tweaks and like changing of the strategy, hopefully we're getting this new regime of pitching nerds in there to help with that. I think definitely that Paxton's that type of player that can go deeper into a game. So there really is no excuse for him to be not, you know, coming up against 200 innings if all was going well. I mean, I know that's a lot asking three guys for 200 innings, but
get 600 innings out of our top three
compared
starters
to what we've looked at. But you look at the makeup of the players. Those are the guys.
I think you got to temper expectations also because Paxton is never even topped. I think I should look this up, but I think 180 innings is his top because he's been an injury history guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was definitely in that range. But the thing is now he's a number three, so they don't even need him to be that, right? So they need him to – they don't need him to be a 200-inning guy is what I mean. Because he's this now number three guy, he's got a little bit more room to work with, which maybe is a good thing for Paxton. You know, maybe now he's got some room to grow and, you know, the pressure's off as much because of the – I think that actually the Cole signing helps out all of the guys underneath him kind
of
get into their own little pocket and find out who they are. So
Garrett Cole is an ace unequivocally.
Yes.
And what that does for a rotation is if there's guys struggling – Garrett Cole can be the guy that stops things. Like, we saw Sabathia do that in the early parts of his Yankees career.
Pettit was that guy.
Yeah, and that goes a long way, I think, for a staff. Because even though the cliche is momentum is only good as your next day starting pitcher, well, things can snowball in a negative way sometimes with starting pitching, right? And you just go on a week or 2 week stretch where everyone's getting crushed and no one can get through the fifth inning and your team looks helpless when that happens. And theoretically, Garrett Cole comes around that next fifth day and says, no, guys, I'm going to pitch 8 shutout innings tonight.
Well, and I like that. I love the makeup of that because I think that's Paxton is a big, I think he could be a very big X factor in this. Because you're looking at a guy that, you know, with the physical makeup and the physical tools and the arsenal that he has in the sense that he could go high 90s. He's got different pitches. He can work in and out. Like, I think the presence of Garrett Cole and what he's learned and how he's improved his career as well, you could see some similarities in how these guys have flashed some you know, very good showings on the field. But Paxton hasn't totally put it all together for a long period of time. The fact that Cole is there, I think it could really help him out too, as far as like the mentality and strategy on how to attack players.
And the depth in the rotation behind those top four guys, Tanaka included in those top four guys, I think is also a strength. Hap's here for now. They're going to try and offload him. We'll see if that happens. I would like them to offload Hap because even if you get rid of Hap, you have Montgomery coming back next season and Herman. I know those are two question marks because Montgomery had Tommy John surgery, came back late last year, and Herman has the domestic violence suspension looming over his head. He ended last season being suspended. But I don't see the Yankees giving up on Herman, do you?
I think it depends on what comes out. You know, as far as the final resolution of what's happened here. Because we don't know what's happened. We don't have the answers. And we don't have the majority of the information.
All we can go on is the info that's been,
and I think that's and I think that's incomplete. So I think it's hard to tell what he is right now, whether he's anything or not, or how the Yankees feel about him. I don't think we know. I think it's too hard to speculate because, you know, the information of the incident and what happened and what actually occurred, I think, is so important that it's impossible to say.
Do you want the Yankees to move on from Herman?
Again, I think that the information of what happened to me is important in the context of this whole situation.
Because some people don't want to root for Herman, and I get
that. Of course not.
And even if he can be a good pitcher, it does. You know, some people say, "Well, I don't care as long as you're producing on the field." People cheer for Aroldis Chapman, and he had some issues in his past.
Yeah.
But I understand take if you say, I just don't want to have to cheer for Domingo Germán every fifth day.
I mean, of course, if there's a guy that's seemingly a bad guy in your team, why would you want to root for that guy? It's hard to do that. It's hard to detach the person and the player and the laundry and the player. And some people could do that. Some people can't, you know, to each their own as far as how they want to approach something like that. But again, you know, until we have all the information of what happened, I think, and how the Yankees are going to go about it, it's too incomplete to even judge, which makes it too very murky for what the Yankees are going to do with their roster. And I think that, you know, if you're looking at Jay Happ, I mean, Jay Happ down the stretch was actually a pretty decent pitcher. He improved dramatically. I'm going to look up the numbers of what he was down the stretch because I saw it recently and I was surprised in how good it was. But I don't think what we saw last year was of Jay Happ was the guy that can be expected. I still think there's a better pitcher there. You know, whether it's adjustments with the ball and such. At the end of the day, he's a guy that's going to be the fifth starter, number five starter, to eat some innings. And when you talk about the injury history that's happened to the Yankees and how they've been decimated in the starting pitching, we've always gone back to depth. So if you keep a guy like Happ in there and eating contract like, I know the luxury tax thing and all this, like this, I don't really, to go back to your cliche from last week, it's not my money. I don't care about it. I still want the depth of that guy, because if I can start Jordan Montgomery in AAA and have him there ready to come up, or if Happ struggles or someone gets injured, like to me, that's a better situation for the Yankees than starting there with no depth in AAA on the team in 2020.
I get that. But I think if you can offload some of Happ's money, let's say half, $8.5 million of a $17 million, I think that's beneficial overall. I would do that.
I don't know how beneficial that is. I don't think that's going to prevent them from doing anything or make them do certain things. I don't think.
Well, yeah, because the reality might be whether they offload half or not, half of Happ or not, they're going to go over the top tax.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
So keep the depth.
Maybe, but they might have a plan to offload half of Happ. And then who knows what comes out of this Ellsbury thing?
Sure. I mean, there's potential situations
because
we just saw
Cespedes settle with the Mets for a lower salary. And I think that might be what the Yankees are hoping they do with Ellsbury. They are not expecting to get off scot-free where it's like $0. But what if they settle for $10 million or $12 million or $15 million? And you can back that out too. Now you're under the top tax threshold by $12 million. And it's a real possibility to stay under it.
I think that situation is definitely, I mean, it's a different situation. You're now looking at something that's very different, and you're trying to cut, you know, however many dollars off of that. You want to shave it as much as you can to stay under, to not only keep you under the penalty, but also give you a little bit more flexibility to make a move at the deadline and still stay under, because you're looking at half of a year's salary. Now your list of players is grown. If you have $15 million to work with.
Right. What if there's another Edwin Encarnacion out there next season that the Yankees want or need for one reason or another, but he comes with $7 million in salary? I would like that to not be a deterrent for them.
That's the thing. So I think
when you sign Garrett Cole for $324 million, money should not deter you from building a World Series champion the next season. I hope it doesn't.
No, it should not, because now that you're going all in essentially with that money, you're making that decision. And look, the Yankees have identified, and they've been very vocal about this. If there's a player that's the correct fit for what we are doing, we have no problem spending the money. That's been what they've said. Garrett Cole was that guy. Last year, they didn't fully believe in the Corbins or whomever, so they made other moves to adjust for that, knowing that Cole is going to be the prize in 2020 and they're going to go all in. Machado, Harper, not the guy that was the natural fit. Rather take that money and spend it on Cole in 2020. They can't come out and say that to us in 2019 and say this is the plan, because then you're putting your cards on the table way too early. So, you know, there's obviously a plan here, and they've proved now, I think they should have proved to everybody who's a fan of the Yankees and watching what they do and how they operate, that they will spend money on the player that they deem the correct player that fits their system and their plan moving forward. So they're just not going to tell us what that plan is.
Do you think pursuing Josh Hader is the correct plan?
you look on the field and you see a relief pitcher like Josh Hader is available. You see the team that is set up for the New York
Yankees. Reports
have
differed on that. The Brewers have made him available, but then I've also read reports that the Brewers just want to collect information from teams to see what they could possibly get for Hader, who has four more years of team control and has been one of the nastiest relievers in baseball the past two seasons.
When you see the 4 years of control, that's huge. And now you're giving up prospects like almost any prospect not named Dominguez. You could look at and see as because you're looking at 4 years of control now. So now this guy is essentially becoming, an asset
even
into the future.
He hasn't even hit arbitration yet.
Yeah. So you have, there should be no issue giving a prospect for a guy like this who will be on your team for 4 years at least.
Well,
and who is as dominant as he is.
The player, I agree, but you're not addressing, the bullpen's going to be good with Josh Hader or not next year.
Yes.
So why would you give up, say, Deve Garcia for Josh Hader when you could sign Dellin Betances for just money?
Well, I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive. I don't think, like, I think that if Betances is getting the amount of, if Betances is getting the attention that he seemingly is, like, it sounds like the Dodgers are around him. There's potential that people are going to buy out a couple more years. I think that was the reason why we didn't, in our plan, put Betances on our team is because I expected him to get more than 1 year of a deal. I expected some team to say, you know what, this guy is one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball. And while he may not be totally the same guy this year because of this Achilles thing, he might be, he may not be, it's worth the risk to give him more years because when he is healthy, he's dominant.
He's ranked since 2014 season third in reliever war.
I mean, that's crazy. So,
and that's with missing pretty much the entire 2019 season.
So, yes, I think that when you're looking at Betances, if they can get him back, then great. But also, at the same time, Hader is a very different situation because of the control.
The control, yeah, that does make a difference. I just don't know. I would just hate to see them give up a top prospect or multiple top prospects when I know for the long term, maybe Hader is definitely a better option than Dellin Betances.
I mean, for the short term, it's not that far off either.
No, it's not. For the short term, I could see Dellin Betances being just as filthy in 2020 as Josh Hader.
Yes, but there's a risk. There's more of a risk there on the field. And the Yankees right now, are they looking for more risk or are they looking for more of a sure thing to win right now? Because 2020, you got to win the World Series.
Yeah.
So do you want the guy that's going to now be on your team for 4 years who you're giving up prospects, but who gives a shit because they're not going to be there for this run anyway, or really be contributors for this run anyway, for the next 4 year run? Are they really going to be there and be major
Garcia
contributors?
Garcia might be.
Maybe Garcia, but still a maybe. Now you've bolstered the rotation. You have a filthy bullpen and you can add a guy that's a 4 year option for this team who's filthy. And you're giving up, and who's controlled? You know, the salary actually works better for you now.
Oh yeah,
much better.
Definitely. Yeah, even though Betances is open to a 1 year prove me contract, it's not gonna be a cheap.
The prove me contract is gonna very much affect what happens with this tax threshold.
Yeah, $8 or $9 million, I would assume.
And that bust them over.
Yeah, there's rumors that Betances might sign with the Mets. The Mets have interest because there's a Beltran connection there. I don't know. I don't know where Betances is going to go. Phillies are also rumored. I guess they're just, Joe Girardi is collecting all his old Yankees favorite players.
Yeah, there's a relationship
If Betances does sign in Philly, though, he might not want to because of all the B-whips with Girardi.
That's true. He could hold that against him.
It reminds me of when Joe Torre went to the Dodgers, and then the Dodgers traded for Scott Proctor.
Yeah.
Scott Proctor must have been so pissed off.
Yeah, but at the same time, Betances had some damn good years under Girardi. Maybe the B-whips are essential to making Betances the pitcher that he needs to be.
Yeah. Does the whole racist tweet thing with Josh Hader concern you at all? We just talked about Herman not being a good guy. So do you want to root? I know Hader has put that to bed. He has apologized. Brewers fans clearly still root for him. But if the Yankees do acquire Josh Hader, you know these racist tweets. It's going to be an article. It's going to be multiple articles. Probably be a topic of conversation at some point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's definitely something that's there for sure. And you don't want to see any of this stuff, man. It's just, it's hard to put those two things aside. It seems like this was a young kid making a mistake and being stupid. And, you know, I don't know enough about it to talk about it well, but no, do I want a guy that's a racist on my team? Hell, no, I don't want a guy that's a racist on my team. I don't. Plain and simple. Do I want to associate with people who are racist? No, I do not. So, I don't know how much that plays into the considerations of what they get him or not. Like you said, he's apologized. These things are a while ago. I don't know.
Yeah,
I got no comments on it in the sense that, like, yeah, I'm okay with it, because I'm not okay with it. But at the same time, like, all these guys are all making so many mistakes, and people make mistakes when they're kids. Like, at some point, like, are you going to kill someone forever about something they did as a kid? Or are we going to now say, okay, are you educated on something? Are you now smart enough to realize what you said was offensive and hateful and hurtful? And have you grown as a person? Because I think people are better. People want to see, even people who make comments like this or do things that are bad, if you're growing as a person and you're putting something like this behind you, I think everybody can look at that and say, okay, we want to give a person a second chance, but they got to be truly better. That's it. Like, you got to be better, be genuine and actually care about certain things. So
what annoys me about a lot of these situations when old tweets or old things get dug up from people's past, what annoys me also in all things is people don't forgive. They don't even give you the chance. Like, the public perception doesn't let you say that you've grown as a person. If you prove you've grown as a person and changed, and hater says, these views no longer represent what I view today.
Yeah.
And people still say, no, you're a racist. It's like, well, okay, then what are we doing here? You're never going to forgive him. So it's just, you go round and round in circles, and it's the never-ending hate storm on social media.
Right.
That pisses me off almost as much as when people do stuff like this, because that's no way to live in a society. Like, you can't just never forgive if someone proves that they have changed, or you know, I don't know if he's proved it, but you got to take him for his word, right? If he's apologized.
Maybe. I mean, everybody can make their own decision on that, but at the same time, I think the opportunity to allow somebody to be a better person and make those strives towards the side of you know, decency and moral having a decent, a good moral code. Like, I think those opportunities should be present for people to come back from things. But yeah.
And that is, I think, ties into Herman. And we said it's tough to root for a guy who has the past that Herman has. And that's a lot more new than
it just Hader. Happened. That's
because
to me, that's a very
these
different
tweets
situation.
From Josh Hader are from 2011 and 2012.
How old was he?
I
in high school?
Yeah, because I don't even know
the
how
amount
old
of
he is
dumb
now,
things
but
that I probably would have said. I'm not saying I would have sprayed racist tweets, but the amount of dumb things that I would have said that probably I would have regretted in high school and probably into college, as far as like where my mentality was and how immature I was. Do I want those things? Would I want those things to follow me for the rest of my life? No, absolutely.
Yeah, he was 16. He was 16 years old.
16 years old. Okay. No, I'm sorry. People at 16 years old, I don't care who you are, where you grew up, where you're from, how you grew up. You say stupid things at 16. You don't understand what you're saying at 16.
Yeah, bottom your brain line. Might be most stupid at 16.
Yeah. So, no, I think that when you see something, if we're referencing a guy who was tweeting something at 16 years old, no, I think that he deserves the benefit of the doubt of to come back from that.
Yeah, and I think it's fair. And I think it's fair, even though Herman stuff just happened this past season, we have to give him that opportunity too.
Maybe if he presents that opportunity, he's contrite and actually like does the right things. I don't know. Again, there's not enough information for me to make any judgments on that whole situation, because it's very, very fuzzy. And really all we know now is that something very bad happened, and that's all we know. So like now I'm not there to give him anything, you know?
So maybe the Yankees are approaching the season like they're not going to have Herman. That's probably the way they should approach it.
Maybe. I think they probably know a hell of a lot more information than we do, and they know what that course of events and the timeline of things that's going to occur. So it's, again, it's just really hard for any of us to say anything about that situation because we don't know. We don't know what the deal is. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about the backup catcher and Higgy. So Jack Curry tweeted something. He said, with Romine signing in Detroit, Yankees lose a valuable backup catcher. That means Higashioka will ascend to that position. Club execs like his power ability versus lefties and his advanced pitch framing skills. I thought this, because Jack Curry doesn't just throw shit against the wall. He has some information that I think the Yankees are going to trust Higgy to be the backup catcher. You agree?
Yeah, I think that was kind of the, I feel like that was the plan. When I saw that, you know, when you see what Romine's done for this organization, how long he's been there, it's like he's going to find, he wants to start at some point in his career, doesn't he? And someone gave him an opportunity to, you know, at least do it for the time being in Detroit. I mean, you know, it's Detroit, but at the same time, the guy wants to start, and I don't think he cares
say
where he's
playing. Say the Yankees
he wants to
match.
Prove that he could do this.
Say the Yankees were willing to match $4.1 million that Detroit was to be the backup catcher to Gary Sanchez, which also comes with like a month of starting, because let's be honest about Gary Sanchez. Even in his best season ever, 2017, he only played 122 games because he missed the month of April with a bicep strain. Gary Sanchez has not been the most durable player. So whoever is the backup catcher is going to play 50-plus games. I think that you just got to assume that. So I think that's the question. That's where it becomes the question with Higgy is maybe Higgy can be a backup catcher for 35 games. Can he be a backup catcher for 50 to 65 games?
Yeah, and you know, he's 29 years old. He's not a young pup either. He's a guy that's...
No, they were going to lose him if they didn't move on from Romine. Higgy was pretty, because he's out of options.
Yeah. No, I think it's a natural fit. He's obviously been in the organization for a while. He's got the trust of, I think, a lot of the players as well, and there's a relationship there too. So it seems like it's a very natural progression from a guy like Romine, who was in a very similar situation. And, you know, Romine was garbage for a while too. And he made a lot of progression in his game, especially offensively. We saw what he was able to. He was a very serviceable backup catcher who came in at times when Gary Sanchez was not on the field and played well. And
the last two seasons, Romine had a 95 OPS plus combined, which is just slightly, barely below league average, which for a backup catcher, if you can get almost average offensive production out of, you take that every day of the week.
No, absolutely. And so I think maybe they're
the
looking
problem,
at that.
The problem, though, that
there's
I had with Romine.
There's more pop in Higgy's bat, I think.
It's more of an all-or-nothing hitter. The problem I had with Austin Romine was nothing to do with Austin Romine. It was with people that would argue Romine should start over Gary Sanchez because they would look at like a month stretch where he hit 305 or something like that. And it's just like the inability to look beyond that was frustrating.
Yes. I think one of the big things for Higgy is he needs to become more patient at the plate, similar to what Romine, you talk about him being an all or nothing. What did you say that?
No, Romine's was not all or nothing.
No, Higgy, I was saying.
Higgy projects to be an all or nothing type player.
But you had him at 30%?
He struck out 31%. He has struck out 31% of his major league plate appearances, which is high.
But listen to this. So in the second half last year, this is where the eye test kind of fails you, I think. It fails me. But I remembered him having better at-bats. That was my recollection in my head. No. The at-bats, 41. Plate appearances, 41. Walks.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't walk either.
Walks, zero.
Yeah, he doesn't
strikeouts,
walk.
Strikeouts, 20. That's a 50% clip.
Yeah.
So he is an all-or-nothing guy at this point, and what he showed down the stretch. He had three home runs there. But
I think it's tough to take away. He has 156 major league plate appearances spread out over the course of two seasons.
But second half of last year, you're looking at 14 games, 41 appearances. It's a decent little chunk, at least.
AAA numbers last season were pretty good. 129 WRC plus in AAA. That's very good. And he improved his walk rate to 9%. It's still low. And he improved his strikeout rate to 20%, which is not bad. I know it's AAA, but those numbers aren't terrible. It goes to show you those are both improvements from 2018 AAA. So he made improvements. That's a good thing. I still think, though, he's going to be an all-or-nothing type player. And, yeah, the Yankees love his power ability. My favorite little thing about Higgy, do you remember his first three big league hits were all home runs?
Yeah.
So he was like 3 for 25, which is three home runs.
But something he was also like 0 that. For the century when before he got that first home run. Like, everybody's like, come on, can we get this first hit? Because he didn't. It took him a very long time to get that hit. I forget the amount of at-bats. But
well, he actually got at-bats in 2017, no hits. Then it took him a while in 2018 before he got his
first. Yeah, so the 0 for hit, was,
and it was a home run. And then he followed it up like the next day with a home run. And then like a week later hit a home run. Those are his only hits. It was funny.
Yeah.
But again, offensively, you're not going to make a decision on your backup catcher based on his offense.
No.
So can he handle it defensively? And I think that's where it really
It seems like in. The framing rate, the fact that he can frame his pitches and handle a staff is extremely important. He can't throw out guys. Maybe that's something he can improve upon. I don't know how much you can
17%
build on arm strength or, you know, quickness at this point in your career. Probably not. Probably is kind of
you
close
can
to
improve,
what he is.
You can improve a few different things. You can Footwork. Improve pop time can be improved.
He's 29 years old, though. There's going to be marginal changes. And I know there's a new – the Yankees have brought in a new catching instructor. He came in from the Minnesota Twins. Apparently, a lot of people are very high on this guy as well. So that could be something that we're looking at and how he's improving the way that these guys are training. I think this could be a different year in the approach and how they're how they're approaching the catcher position because of some of the changes they've made in the coaching staffs. But so yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do that. But as far as like big changes from Higgy as the type of player he is, 29 years old, throwing people out at, what'd you say, 17%?
Yeah, he's thrown out 70% of base stealers. League average is 28%. For context, Austin Romine was 23%.
Yeah.
Gary Sanchez, 33%.
So you're looking at Gary Sanchez with the hose and the guys behind him. And, you know, I don't know what the split, like what the average split is when you're seeing between the starting catcher and the backup catcher, unless you got like a Molina brother behind you, you're going to probably see a relatively drastic split between your starter and your backup catcher. But
here's where it can be
framing,
an issue.
I think is the important thing for him as far as handling the, even though I don't love the framing stat, I think the fact that he has the ability to, receive the ball well is important.
You know who I bet loves the framing stat? Brian Cashman.
And Matt Blake, I bet, loves it too.
And the nerds. Because framing
or
actually...
Marty Bloke, or what was Joel Sherman calling him? Everything but...
Oh, yeah, everything but Matt Blake, maybe the easiest name in the world to remember. So catcher defensive value, I talked about this with Dan Zimborski a while ago. Framing is not a perfect science, but it's actually weighed very heavily in overall catcher defensive value. That's why Gary Sanchez's value last season went down, even though eye test-wise, he's blocking pitches better. That's a good thing. Well, he was sacrificing strikes, potentially, to block. So I think the Yankees, I bet if you ask them, will take the 17 pass balls if it means he can be better framing. Fans aren't going to like it.
How about we just be better at both?
Well, you can't have everything, Scott.
How about we just break down regular mechanics and block the goddamn ball? You know,
Higgy's got a good – Higgy's framing numbers are good. The strikeout and his pass ball numbers are good too. Actually, very close rate to Gary Sanchez last year, which was good. Higgy only threw it, like I said, 17 base stealers. The thing that concerned me was that the attempts off of him. Opponents were attempting a stolen base every 10 innings with Higgy catching, whereas with Romine, they were doing it every 13.1 innings, and then with Gary Sanchez, every 14.5 innings. So that's a difference of basically one a game or one every two games.
Yeah.
Or not one every two games, a half every game.
I think the approach is definitely something we have to watch in spring training and how they're going about certain things and just kind of the narratives behind that. You know, we'll I'm sure get a lot of different stories from the new coaching staff, pitchers, catchers. There's a lot of turnover as far as personnel and the guys that are going to be working with them. So I have a feeling a lot of the beat guys are going to be, you know, on that and paying attention to some of these guys and their approach and the way that they go about things. So I'm going to be very interested to hear more about some of these coaches and how they, you know, they handle some of the young catchers and even some of the veteran catchers and what their approach is to improve some of the guys that have been around for a while. I mean, like Gary Sanchez, has been a guy that has, you know, in the league for a while and has mechanics and tendencies and all these things. How is that going to change? How do you get a guy like that at this point in his career and make adjustments? So I'm interested to hear all of that stuff.
Are you cool with them having Higgy be the backup?
Yeah, I am.
Just, again, I think, with Gary Sanchez, he's going to – Gary Sanchez will go on the IL next year, or he'll miss games for one reason or another. Like, we've seen it every year with Gary Sanchez.
Backup catcher is one of those situations where you're looking around and you're like, okay, what are the other options? And I know we're looking at a potential
Maldonado. People want Maldonado.
Whatever.
No.
You know,
is Maldonado going to be there for 9 years?
No, I think that's not really the point.
You're going to sign Maldonado to a 9-year contract?
That's not the point, because he's not actually a personal catcher. The thing is...
Yes, he is.
No, he's not. They want to find a veteran guy, a presence, if it's not Higgy. They want to find a veteran presence who can handle a staff. And what they believe, I think, they believe that Higgy can be that guy.
Yeah. No, and I did an analysis on Higgy based on going on Fangraphs, but obviously I'm going to trust the Yankees evaluators over myself.
He's also been in the system. He's been in the system for a very long time, and I think that's a lot. There's a lot of value in that, and the Yankees have shown that they like that. That they actually do value the fact that a guy has been in the system for a long time. They would prefer that, I think, is from the backup catcher. Mm-hmm. At least seemingly they've shown that trend in the past.
Yeah. So, the. Anything else? We talked about Didi at the end. Any other thoughts on Didi? He had a little message for Yankees fans. I want to thank the New York Yankees organization for the awesome 5 seasons I had there and for letting me grow into myself and be around a great group of guys. And to the fans, thanks for the boos and the cheers and push me to be better. Much love. Didi didn't, I guess, proofread his tweet, but that's what it said.
I don't think he was expecting you to read it either. Look, man, I'm going to miss Didi. That was one of those. Someone was Chris, guy I met actually when I was in Taiwan, tweeted at me saying, you know, when was the last time a beloved Yankee like Didi left at a time in, you know, theoretically the prime of his career, like right in the middle of his career? It doesn't happen very often. Like Soriano. Soriano was a guy that
well, he was traded away,
but he left the team. You know, that was, he was a beloved Yankee.
Cano.
At that time. Cano is, I guess, a guy that left for that too. But it doesn't happen often when you see a guy like that go. No. Cano was different because he came up with the organization. That was, to me, a different scenario, and it was a big contract. And like, this one was like, we don't want you anymore. We just don't want you on this team. That was clearly the message. You know, whether it was that harsh or not, it was not a fit any longer for Didi to be on this team. Looking into the future, they had a guy that was able to play that position. And when you look at the personnel, especially with LeMahieu, even though it's 1 year, I would definitely like to see an extension now with LeMahieu for sure, because the personnel really actually calls for that. Him being the second baseman, that's what he is now. Don't you want to see a guy that's going to be playing in the middle with a new shortstop who's your franchise shortstop? Don't you want to see them playing for more than 1 year? Don't you want to guarantee that they're going to be playing for more than 1 year? I do.
I mean, I don't see them announcing anything because that would affect the luxury tax.
Not really with an extension. I mean, it depends on what the AAV is and the average.
Right.
It may not, but.
Well, he's making 12 a year.
It'll
after
affect
the
it
year
a,
he just came off.
It'll
of.
Affect
don't you think
it
he'd
marginally.
Ask for more than 12?
It'll affect it marginally within. No, I think I had him re-signed at 19. I think I get.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I put him at an 18, 19. So you're looking at 5 to 6.
Every little bit counts.
I'm just, yeah, but to what? To what? To the luxury tax at this point.
No.
Who gives a shit?
Okay, but next season, a lot of money comes off the books.
Yes. So that's
so
what I'm
do
saying.
It then. Do it then.
As don't get greedy with that, though, because he's not a player that you want to get greedy with. If you can sign him now, if you can get that in there, again, this is. Goes back to the point of, we're not going to worry about the luxury tax this year because we know that. If we go over, fine. But what we're doing is securing our team for the next however many years. And if you could do that with LeMahieu,
well, just because
I think
you
approach
over,
that in a similar situation. Otherwise, you're really playing with fire when he does become a free agent, because now you have no control of it anymore.
But the amount you go over is also a factor, because it's not just, oh, you're over, so you pay X amount of dollars. You pay a percentage on the amount
you
go
over.
But
the money is not the situation. The money, to me, is not the real reason why they care. It's more the compensation, the draft pick compensation, those other factors that go into it. Like, to me, is more than the dollar amount of what they're concerned about. So,
yeah.
But again, what is the value compared to losing a guy, or the potential to lose a guy like LeMahieu, by giving him the opportunity to now negotiate with other teams?
Right. Yeah.
That's significant, because what he was to this player, this team this year, was significant. There's no way the team was even close to where they were without a DJ LeMahieu.
Well, I do think, though, it's also, they believe you don't need to go over that top tax threshold to build a World Series champion. And we're seeing with the Red Sox what they're going through now. They blew past the luxury tax for the past few seasons. Yes, they got a World Series out of it, but last season they didn't make the playoffs, and now they're backtracking and they're trying to cut payroll. So much so that they actually took Rule 5 players this year. Usually you don't have teams like the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers taking Rule 5 players, because the rule is you got to keep them on your 40-man roster for the whole season, or else they go back to the team. So usually you find small market teams cherry picking big market teams for Rule 5 guys. Well, now the Red Sox are trying to round out their 40-man roster with bottom of the barrel payroll guys. Because this is what happens when you just blow past the luxury tax threshold. That is what, I'm not telling you agree with this, but that is what the Yankees believe.
But again, that's out the window now. The fact that they signed Gerrit Cole threw that away. It's gone.
And
now,
and signing
right now,
Gerrit Cole is worth it. It's all worth it.
And the why it's so different in the situation that you just laid out is the amount of money that's coming off of the books next year. The Red Sox didn't have that. The Red Sox didn't have that money coming off
the books.
No, they're
trying to dump money.
Right.
They're so desperate to cut payroll. They're talking about getting rid of Mookie Betts just to cut payroll.
Well, I think they're going to find out where they are next year and then probably sell Mookie Betts at some point, depending on where they are. They're probably going to make another run to see if everybody is healthy, because they still have pitching. I mean, if those guys are healthy, they still have a team. JD Martinez is still there. They still have the same very core team that's there. If they play well in the beginning of the season, I don't see them getting rid of Mookie Betts immediately. But the thing is, the Yankees are in a very different situation because the payroll is coming off already. It's coming off. Like, it is definitely coming off. So you're really now only going after this luxury tax situation for 1 year. And it's already very, very, the percentage is high that you're already going to be over it. So,
well, this conversation actually goes really well into the first mailbag question. And it is from Ben Snow at It's Ben Snowin on Twitter. So he sent us a screenshot.
Did he just change that Twitter handle? Because that's pretty smart. That's pretty good if you just changed it to that. It's Ben Snowin.
Oh, yeah. No. But has it not? Do you know him?
No, I do not know him. But I want to know if that's his, if that's also his Twitter handle during the summer. You know what I'm saying? Like, is it changed? Does he change with the seasons?
Weather jokes. I love it. He sent us a screenshot from MLB.com about Judge, and he says, this can't be true, right? And basically what it says is, I'm not going to read it verbatim because it's long, and you know how I am at reading out loud.
Not good.
It's that Aaron Judge won't be a New York Yankee come 2023 when he is due for free agency because of the money that they just committed, not only to Gerrit Cole, but also the money that they will be committing to other players like Gleyber Torres, who they are more likely to sign to a massive long-term contract than Aaron Judge, who will be 31 years old when he is due for free agency.
Look, I think that Aaron Judge is one of those generational Yankees. I'm not saying he's generational talent. I'm saying generational Yankee. Like, he's the guy. He's been the guy. I think he's labeled the guy. I think Gleyber Torres is scratching at that a little bit. But as long as his injuries don't get the best of him, which I think is a concern given his body type and the way that he plays, I think that's always going to be a concern. I don't think he's ever not going to be a New York Yankee. But so when you're looking at 23,
like,
it's a concern.
They don't like 31-year-old players.
I think it's so hard to tell what that contract's going to look like because of we don't know where he's going to be physically. And if he's healthy, if he proves that he's healthy throughout, you know, up until 31, then I think he's going to get a contract from the Yankees that's going to be big enough for where he stays. But that's a that is a potential question mark. You know, I think that that's good. That is a concern. His health.
On the one hand, part of me wants them to sign him to an extension, rip up these arbitration years and sign him to an extension and pay him money from when he's 28 years old through 34 years old versus having to make the tough decision from when he's 31 years old to 37 years old.
And Judge may do that. Judge may actually, he may also have some, you know, some understanding of the fact that he is a big guy that you know can get hurt, and I think maybe it takes him a little longer to heal sometimes, but I don't know. It depends on the money, but I could see them doing that. I could see them trying to do that at least. I actually don't think that they're going to be public about anything unless they know it's going to happen. So I don't think that they would offer a buyout of the arbitration years and you know pay him for however long unless they knew damn well that it was already going to happen. You know what I mean? Like I don't think they would be public about that. You can't really mess around with the fact that you're going to offer an extension to Judge and then he turns it down.
Right.
Because that would be
a bad... Those conversations would be happening behind
closed
doors.
And I don't think Judge wants to do that either in the type of player that he is.
I also am terrified of any sort of arbitration battles that the two sides could have. We've seen how they've treated beloved players in arbitration in the past. Can you imagine the terrible PR hit if Randy Levine's out there?
Judge is different.
Talk negatively about Aaron Judge?
No, you can't do that. Judge is different.
Oh, he gets hurt every year. He can't really handle. He can't hit in the postseason. Like Randy Levine would say this shit.
Yeah, you can't do that to Aaron Judge. Cannot. Cannot do that.
He did it to Dellin Betances. And I know they're different, but they're also different. How could you have been more successful than Dellin Betances at what you do?
Yeah. No, it's the game of arbitration and the fact that he wasn't a closer. And that was the whole game. They're trying to play a game there.
Which now, maybe in 2015, 16, that was a thing. But I can't imagine that arbitration is weighing saves. Like, haven't we moved past the save when evaluating value of guys?
It's all about precedent, man. So whoever's setting, if someone could break through that initial precedent, then I think, yeah, that makes it a lot easier to get beyond some stats that are as, you know, as concrete as saves. Because just depends if you're pitching in that situation or not.
Saves are based on opportunity.
Yes. It doesn't say how good of a player you are.
No.
Because other people can be in that situation and get a save. But you look at the numbers, that's where you are. The thing is, it's all about
the
value.
The arbitrators or the teams argue that it does tell you how good you are.
Because they need things
to depend. If you were good enough, you would be the closer.
Right. But you also, and the arbitrator needs, they need stats to pin numbers against. They need positions and stats to make that bar.
Right, and the player side is probably arguing for things like win probability added for a reliever because that's very big. If you come in the seventh inning, bases loaded situation, and you get out of that, that adds a lot to your win probability added, which is a value that is not going to show up on the scoreboard as far as a save. I mean, you get a hold. But what is a hold?
You don't get that many guys who are in arbitration who are getting notching saves. Period.
No.
That's something that's just not happening as much. So now you're trying to peg their value based on something that doesn't really happen in arbitration very often. Because the guys that are getting saves, the majority of the closers in the league are veteran guys beyond arbitration who have contracts that are not dealing with this arbitration process and trying to peg their numbers based on saves because it's just they don't have the saves.
Yeah. Like saves, all saves are not created equal. All holds are not created equal.
All arbitration cases are not created equal. But Randy Levine does not believe that.
So we got, I didn't think we would, but we got it. The mailbag from Sean G. I'm finding it hard to be excited about the Cole contract. Can you explain why it's not Ellsbury 2.0? What faith can we have that the next decade isn't going to be ruined by the combo of contracts of Cole and Stanton? What happens when we need to re-sign Judge, Sanchez, and Seve, not to mention Glaber?
Look, the re-signing of these guys is going to be a bone of contention at some point. It's definitely going to be there because it's inevitable. They're going to demand contracts. They're going to demand large contracts. But until then, you got to play very well and win as much as you can while they are not under contract. Like the whole point of these guys, the reason why this team can be as successful and as deep as they are is that you're not paying them now. And if you don't take advantage of those years where you're adding some, this is very tricky when you're trying to make a 10-year plan. Because I don't think 10-year plans are as much in vogue as they used to be. But when you're trying to do you're trying to make a plan, you're trying to win within the next 5 years, you know that you have controllable assets, high level assets at a controllable cost. So now is the opportunity to actually add high leverage talent at a price to package along with these guys, because now your product on the field is as high as you could possibly get, because you're getting you're paying for talent that's high, and you're also, you have the luxury of controlling talent with low prices. So where's the line on how you balance that? I don't know, but I will tell you this: if we're not going after it now, it's going to be very hard to go after it when you're paying all of these guys later.
So I was joking. Oh, we got it. Someone not liking happy
it.
About
it's a
about
real
the whole
it's a
contract.
Real question though. But it's all about strategy and how you approach the numbers and the balance of the payroll and the players.
Yes, and if in 2023 Aaron Judge signs with another team, and the Yankees don't have Gary Sanchez or signed, or Severino, or Gleyber Torres doesn't get, if any of those things happen because of the contracts of Cole and Stanton, then Sean here has an argument.
But you don't expect that to happen.
No, I don't.
Right.
That happens if you're the Seattle Mariners and you sign Robinson Cano to $240 million. You can't then go sign other players. But the Yankees are not the Seattle Mariners. The Yankees are not the Kansas City Royals. The Yankees are not the San Diego Padres.
They didn't sign Robinson Cano.
That was, I think, a decision that was clearly, I think, made for, I don't know. That was, and I disagreed with that, okay? But that's like literally the only one you can think of.
Yes,
you just said Didi, but Didi's not.
No,
same.
No. I wasn't putting Didi in this conversation. No, that's totally different.
If Gleyber Torres, Gleyber's also came up super young, but if Gleyber Torres is on track to get a massive contract,
yeah,
one day,
yeah. And now, especially he's a shortstop too. Oh yeah.
Like, look at what Rendon just signed for: 7 years at 245 exact. And he's going to be, and Rendon's older now than Gleyber will be when he's a free agent.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 8, 9, maybe 10 years for Gleyber Torres.
Who the hell knows what the contracts are like at that point? Yeah, you could look at like a Bryce Harper, Manny Machado.
Let's just say.
I mean, you could look at the Manny Machado contract.
Let's make the numbers easy. $300 million over 10 years,
fine.
Right?
Sure.
If they don't do that because of other contracts, you, and other Yankees fans have the right to be pissed.
But again, that's first, not if they've won 3 championships. And because, or 2 championships, or maybe even 1 championship. But the reason why you can't get too hung up on this is because exactly what I was talking about. Like, I don't think people understand the fact that these guys are high leverage talents, very high value talents, but they're getting them at pennies on the dollar. Like,
oh yeah.
Like a fraction
it's like
of a penny.
Think about the value you're getting per dollar for Gleyber Torres. Yes. It's unbelievable.
So why would you not add significant talent at a time where you can add payroll because you're getting these guys in for nothing. So,
yeah,
so now is the time to spend. Like, I know at some point these dollars are going to run into each other, but you have to do it if you're the New York Yankees, because now is the time where you're going to have the most talent on your team for this amount of money. If you add the Cole, if you put all of those same guys and Cole on the team in 5 years, think about what the payroll would be. It would be astronomical. So now you're getting that same.
You're gonna have to make some hard decisions.
But put them all on there. Sign every one of them for a 10-year, $300 million. Just for conversation.
Let's hope the new CBA, the top tax threshold is $350 million.
Whatever. Just for conversation's sake, put all of those guys at the contract that you think that they're gonna get right now. Okay. And you have the Cole contract, and you have the Stanton contract.
Right. It's Gleyber Torres for $30 million a year. It's Aaron Judge for close to $30 million a year. It's Luis Severino. I know they bought out some of his arbitration, but if they re-sign him after, it's for $30 million a year.
That's the team we have right now. Okay? So where's the argument? That's the team we have. The value of the team in 5 years is the same team that we have right now. Theoretically, more in their prime. So I don't really understand this. Right? The more I'm saying it out loud, is the more I'm like, no, the Yankees have to spend right now, because now you are maximizing... You're maximizing the amount of talent that you can be on the team at one time per dollar spent. So
Do you think Brian Cashman had this in his mind the whole time when he passed on Patrick Corbin and he passed on Manny Machado and Bryce Harper?
I do. I really do.
Do you think though that he wasn't he was probably banking on Gerrit Cole having another good 2019, but not historically good, which shot his value up even more. That maybe he in his mind thought, okay, maybe 275 is like top end for Gerrit Cole. And then it ended up being 324. Not that I think that really should matter, but
I think the bigger surprise that kind of threw off the money and the plans were the fact that the Nationals won the World Series and Steven Strasburg was the guy leading them to the World Series and got the contract that he did. I think Steven Strasburg actually screwed up everything as far as money. Yeah, Strasburg is the one who really threw the wrench in precedent and driving these contracts up, because who the hell expected the Nationals to be World Series champions with Steven Strasburg standing on top as the guy who dominated in the playoffs, didn't lose, and now is the injury-prone Steven Strasburg going to get 7 years, $245 million, and you're looking at Gerrit Cole sitting over there with, you know, arguably better numbers and a healthier and younger body. So I think that really threw a wrench into the whole thing.
I forget who reported this, but it was that the Yankees were considering Madison Bumgarner as a plan B to Gerrit Cole. And my God, am I happy they got their plan A.
He's not a plan B. He's just a different plan. It's like you're throwing
because
out the plan.
He's asking for $100 million. Think about what Zach. Do you know how old Madison Bumgarner is?
29, I think, or 30. Right? Yeah. He's young. He's younger than anybody expects.
Like, he's not pitching like a 29-year-old because he's got so many miles on him. But just from thinking about him, you'd think, and he's been around so long, and he led the Giants to World Series early in the decade, you'd be like, oh, he's got to be 33 years old at this point.
Yeah.
But Zach Wheeler just got a 5-year, $118 million contract. Patrick Corbin just got a 6-year, 120 whatever the hell it was contract. Madison Bumgarner is going to get $100 million.
Yeah, and he probably should based on what he.
But aren't you glad it's not the Yankees that's going to be giving it to him?
Maybe the Yankees do give it to him.
Aren't you glad it's not the Yankees that's going to be giving
it
to him?
What if the Yankees do give it to him? Are you going to be mad?
Yes.
If they continue,
I'm going to be mad bum.
If they sign Bumgarner right now and trade Hap, You're going to be mad about that?
Because then I could see a real possibility where contracts get tricky. Like, there is, I know the Yankees have more money than God, but there is a point where they're going to stop spending money. And I think it would be frivolous to spend it on Madison Bumgarner. I really do. I'm not saying Madison Bumgarner sucks. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying he's not going to be worth the $23 million he gets.
Yeah.
AAV.
Maybe. He's still only 29 years old, you know. Maybe Marty Black can make a huge difference in that. Take that 29-year-old body and get it back going again. Let's take that 29-year-old body, make some little tweaks on it, throw some stickers on that man, and see what we can improve.
If MLB wants to allow steroids again, then yeah, sign all the 30-year-olds you want because they can pitch into their deep 30s. But I don't think that's going to happen. Bob Hagelstein, hi Scott and Andrew. Believe it or not, you do have some septuagenarians who listen to your show. Do you know what that means?
Old guy.
70 to 79 years old. I had to Google it.
All right.
And I had to Google pronunciation.
Hello, Mr. Hagelstein.
I'm of the age who remember the endless arguments over whether Duke Snider, Willie Mays, or Mickey Mantle is the best center fielder. Naturally, as a Yankees fan, it was Mantle all the way. But here's my question. Now that Cole is in the bag, Didi gone, I'll miss him. Our position players are mostly all set. I've heard the talk about getting a new first baseman, but why not platoon Luke Voit and Mike Ford? I like Ford, who reminds me a little of Babe in physical form. No, I'm not old enough to remember him. Both can pinch hit and DH as well. So in the article I wrote, you know, what's next for the Yankees, I talked about first base for the fifth year in a row being still a question.
Yeah, that's the driving force behind having somebody at first base, I think. To me, like, I mean, everybody who listens knows my love affair with Mike Moustakas and the fact that I wanted him as just a solid contributor at first base that's not going to go anywhere. Like, that's the guy that I want. that's not happening. But the real I think motivation behind that is just having someone there. And you know, look, Luke Voit has done nothing. We both agree that he was injured last year, and I think that was a big part of why he struggled.
156 WRC plus in the 497 plate appearances with the Yankees over the course of those two seasons before he got injured in London. That means he's 56%. He was 56% better than the league average hitter, which is really good. Really, really freaking good.
I think it's a very, very real possibility that we are going to see Luke Voit and Mike Ford as a kind of a platoon over at first base. I think Luke Voit right now still is the leader in the clubhouse to be the starting first baseman, primary first baseman. But Mike Ford, I think, definitely showed enough last year. And Bob was talking about is the ability to go in there and DH and pinch hit. Like, that was the reason why I wanted him on the postseason roster, because he had the ability to pinch hit. He's shown that he can pinch it in big situations.
Two pinch hit home runs led the league, baby.
To me, I loved
Mike Ford.
There was a missed opportunity with that. But at the same time, we're seeing Mike Ford getting into the best shape of his life in the offseason.
I don't know if I like that though.
He's doing yoga.
No,
he's getting all stretched out.
I like Mike Ford doughy. He needs to be like 35 pounds overweight for me to be confident in him.
Mike Ford is an athlete. Like, he is a specimen. He is a hoss.
THICC.
But at the same time, you know, you're looking at what Voit has done. And I think that he's definitely, if he's healthy and can show what he did, you know, similar to the second half of when we acquired him and really the guy before he, I do think that hernia was on him all year long, and it was a problem.
Yeah, oh yeah, he could. Do you remember how susceptible he was to inside pitches in the second half of the year? Like getting beat by mediocre inside fastballs.
Yeah, so you know, whenever those shots would wear off and the hernia would flare back up, like I think that was a problem. That's one of those injuries that's just a pain in the ass and doesn't go, or pain in the stomach and doesn't go away unless you have just rest. You need rest.
Two issues I have with Luke Voit, Mike Ford platoon at first base next year. Number one is defense. They're both bad defensively. And number two is that kind of limits your roster flexibility when you have two guys who can only play first base. Neither can play anywhere else. You have Stanton, who's going to get a lot of DH time. So it's not like one
Stanton's
going to
get a lot of left field time too, though. He should.
Yeah, but I think they're going to... Stanton's the starting DH. You agree?
In a playoff game, no, but maybe.
No, in a playoff game, he sits the bench.
I think it's hard to say that. I mean, yes, I think theoretically you want him in there, but you need he needs to play the outfield. He needs to play left field. He does. Because he's throwing too many problems.
I mean, there's a need, especially when Hicks is out. Because your starting outfielders would be Gardner in left, Talkman in center, and Judge in right.
Yeah, there's a need there. Anyway, whatever, we're going off. But yes, I think that it does throw a bit of a wrench having two first basemen as the DH, or I'm sorry, as a platoon that are only limited there. And maybe, you know, maybe that's not as big of a problem with that extra roster spot. And maybe a guy like Wade is not in the plans, and they're able to do something like this, give them the luxury of you know, combining two players for one production at first base. We'll see how Bob says
both can pinch hit. I know he did have Ford had two pinch hit homers last year, but really in the American League on a team like the Yankees, there's not a ton of pinch hitting opportunities.
Not in the regular season. You're not using that as a real position, a pinch hitting position. In the National League,
there's a real need for a pinch hitter.
Yes. American League regular season. No, I think playoffs. Yes.
That's a different question though. We're talking about,
right,
regular season, you get a couple pinch hitting needs over the course of the year. And really, the Yankees only had so many last year because of all the injuries.
I mean, if I still think that Mike Ford's going to start in AAA and that we're going to have Boyd come up. But it very well not. They could say spring training could happen and LeMahieu could play every single day at second base. And we just see him over there now and maybe giving a little bit more time somewhere else at third base. Who knows? Maybe Andujar goes over to first base, because that's not a consideration in this question either. Where's Andujar going to be? Is he going to be at third base? Is he going to be the DH? Because you're looking at primary DH. If Andujar's still on this team, Stanton needs to play left field.
Yeah, I see Andujar
throws a very different curveball into how they're going to use their roster.
So there was a quote that Gio is open to moving around the infield too. Maybe Gio can
play second. Is he not a shortstop?
No, he's not a shortstop, but I'm confident enough he can play second base, and certainly first base.
You're projecting a different type of player if he's over at first base as well.
Yeah. All right, next question is from Taylor from London, Ontario. Hey, fellas, been a listener since the early days. 1-877 cars for kids. You want to do a little rendition for the people?
I'm good.
And I had a question that could be an interesting one for the slow days of winter. Been in a Twitter argument tonight with some small market jabronis, Baltimore and Cincinnati, about how the Major League Baseball should introduce a salary cap. One suggested it be $200 million, and the other said $150 million. I've never understood the idea behind baseball having a salary cap, and at this point with the money the players are making, it's impossible. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on the topic and how it applies to the parity in professional leagues.
Oh, that was great. I don't think anybody's really concerned about the parity in professional leagues because they are so different, and the fact that, you know, their schedules are so different, the way that they play, the roster construction is so different.
Did you hear Manfred's quote about parity at the winter meetings?
No.
He's very impressed. It basically sums up to, we're very impressed with how the small market teams have found creative ways to compete.
Okay. That's cool. I don't think they care. I don't think they care as much. Like, they want to put some things out forward about, you know, with the luxury tax and giving opportunities for smaller market teams to get creative with how they spend their money, but give them a little bit more dough to work with. I just don't think, first of all, it is impossible. With the strength of the players union, the fact that these contracts are already out there, it would be impossible for that to happen.
Now it's impossible.
It's been impossible for a while.
I think with what they've done,
it's been impossible for a while because everything is
with
relative.
These top penalties. They're creating an unofficial cap.
Yes.
Because what you're finding is, yes, teams still go over it, but now they're not just going over it willy-nilly. They're picking their battles with it, and they're strategically finding ways to get back under it because the penalties are legitimate.
Yes.
And I think I could see maybe more harsh penalties in the future coming down, even more than what's already the penalties, that you limit teams even more from going over it. You're never going to set a hard cap. But you penalize teams, they'll police themselves.
That's the thing. I think that's what they've done, and they've identified and realized that the hard cap will never happen. So this luxury tax system was really the compromise to, you know, trying to control the amount of spending that big market teams have and giving the opportunity for some of these lower market teams to be competitive with salary and, you know, with some of the revenue getting back to them, because there's just so much money made as well in other areas of big market teams. When you're talking about the media contracts as well, like, there's just a ton of money that's going getting funneled into these teams. Like, the value and worth of the Yes Network and also the Dodgers Network. And like, you're looking at some Nesson for Boston, like, significant dollars that are coming in that have nothing to do with what they're spending. You know, what's going back to the luxury tax. So there's a lot of money coming in, but the thing is, they've tried to control it with this luxury tax. And I could see maybe some harsher penalties, but at some point now you're going to see the owners really pushing back on this type of thing too, and how many penalties you're going to be coming in, because they see that it's essentially becoming a cap to the point that it's becoming fiscally irresponsible to spend over it. And if you keep going with these penalties, then you are essentially limiting them, and they could argue that it is a cap.
This is a dumb question. Okay. Is there a floor? I should know this. There's no floor, right?
I don't know. There is. There's penalties, I think, for not spending.
Is there?
Yeah, I gotta look it up. It's never ever talked about, but I think there.
Because you want to talk about parity. I mean, that's also an issue. Tanking is an issue. I think there should be penalties for tanking, and what we've seen. Like, look what the Orioles are doing. They just released their best player from last year because he was going to make like $8 million VR. Jonathan VR. He was their best player last year, and they just were like, no, we don't want him. He's going to cost too much money. So I think that was I think penalties for tanking could help the parity, overall parity of the league. I shouldn't have posed this question and not had an answer to it.
Well, I'm looking it up real quick as well. I'm looking here at the CBA. Tanking was an issue when the CBA was implemented. So this is one of those things when the new CBA deal is up and when there's renegotiations and what's going to happen, they very well could have it mandated that there is a floor, that you do have to spend X amount of money, because you're seeing luxury tax money.
If you don't spend a certain amount of money, then you lose draft picks.
Or you don't receive the money from the luxury tax. You don't receive the benefit unless you're getting hitting a certain amount. Because I actually don't think there is a floor. But there should be some pressure on a team, especially when you see a team with an owner that has a lot of money and just doesn't want to spend it for whatever reason. You gotta mandate them to put a competitive product out there.
Because the Yankees
are going to go 19-0 against the Orioles.
They're going to play 19 games against the Orioles next year, and they're going to be thoroughly boring games, really, when it comes down to it. It's an exhibition. It's a glorified exhibition game. Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch Gleyber Torres hit 20 home runs against them. But at the end of the day, is that the type of baseball that MLB wants out there being broadcast? No, they want something competitive.
T-shirt time wants Gleyber Torres to be
you're gonna pick. We got to pick a new guy.
I feel like I got to stay with him for one more year at least. I feel like I got to stick with it. It was good. It was good. It was working.
Maybe we do something for Garrett Cole. Like every time
we could do something different.
Every time he pitches a complete game shutout.
Okay.
All right. Last one is from Joseph McWeeny, which that can't be a real name.
I mean, especially with the context of this question and like how we're pronouncing something, I'm very. If it's real, then.
Okay. Do you want to read it in an Irish accent?
Okay, sure. I'll butcher the hell out of this.
Hey guys, big fan from Ireland.
From Ireland, you've helped me get through into baseball and underestimate the game, and how the minor leagues and tax threshold luxury tax work. Just one thing about you. Episode 393 podcast. One of you said St. Paddy's Day weekend.
St. Paddy's Day weekend.
Day. This hurts the ears of Irish.
It's not St. Paddy's Day, man.
There's no. That's freaking Jamaican. It's St. Paddy's Day. If you want to make.
That was a little Jamaican.
It was very Jamaican. Paddy is short
for Patrick. Those are too different now that I think about it.
They're very different. Paddy is short for Patricia. Thanks for
Joseph
the great content.
Joseph McWeeny's going to hate us after this.
So here's the thing. Like when I read this question, I was like, St. Paddy's Day, St. Paddy's Day, St. Yeah. Paddy's Day, St. Paddy's Day. I say it the same.
I say it the same way too. I understand written out what he's saying is it's not St. Patty's, T-T-Y. It's Paddy's, D-D-Y.
Did you put St. Paddy's Day in the show notes?
No. It's what I said. It's all about what I said. I said St. Paddy's Day, which he probably... I it's so close that I don't even know what I said.
And just so you all know, when our voices hit your ears, it's even the voice, the actual audio is compressed by whatever podcast listener you're listening to, and makes it that much different.
Yeah, I don't even say half the shit that you hear.
Yeah, it's like they add words, but it is compressed, which probably makes us sound even more alike because some people don't have any idea who's talking at some points, which I don't understand still. Even though your mother, I asked her at your wedding, I said, you know, some people think that Andrew and I sound alike when we're talking. And she was like, you know what? Sometimes I can't tell. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
boy,
that was bad.
Great.
It's real. And it's definitely becoming worse. And you know what it is? It's not just literal tone of voice. It's you start to speak like one another when you talk to each other so frequently. Inflections on words and different speech patterns and stuff like that. I think that's where some confusion comes in.
All you have to do, if there's a negative tone to whatever they're saying, it's Andrew. If there's something that's a little bit half glass full, it's probably Scott.
Yeah. Joseph McWeeny. All right, you ready for Out of Left Field?
Yes.
And that out is Sanchez destroys that to left field.
There it goes. Deep to left. Really deep.
In the air to left field. Back at the track. At the wall. We are tied.
I pissed on a public building.
Yeah. So out of left field this week is nothing to do with either of us. And it actually has to do with what happened to JJ on Saturday, which is one of the craziest 24 hours of stories I've ever seen. It's up on the website. It's all over Twitter. He's kind of going viral with it, so maybe you've seen it. But in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m. on Saturday, a dog wandered into JJ's house in Philadelphia. And he just had a baby. His baby is a month old, so he has a newborn. He gets woken up by his wife at like 3 in the morning, and he's probably freaking out like, holy shit, what's wrong with our daughter? And she's like, there's a puppy in the house. And if you know him, he already has a dog. So a new puppy mysteriously found its way into their house. And the crazy thing is the door was shut when they woke up. And they found out later that someone walking by shut the door because they had a like a doorbell camera, a door camera.
It looks like there's a security camera from up top. So it's further up. Yeah. The building has
had
a
they not
camera.
Had that security footage, they would have just been like, how the hell did this dog magically appear in our house?
The fact that they have now, like, they can actually string this together to a real story, to actually a sequence of events is amazing and miraculous. The fact that a dog, and you know, it's not a puppy. It's the dog looks young, but it's an older dog. And the reason I think
the
it looks young
saying
is
9 years old
is because it's been the malnutrition on the dog is so bad.
It's
you see the rib cage.
Issues.
It's like super
it's
skinny.
It's so sad.
It is very
it's
sad.
It's so friggin' sad. It's
and from what he's saying, the dog has been on the street for, you know, a month plus is what
yeah,
their best
very,
guess is.
Very bad teeth. A lot of
fleas,
teeth issues.
Dog had fleas. Probably heartworm. Like, there's probably
no chip in the dog, which
makes a lot of sense because the owner's an asshole. The whoever had this dog, obviously, whether the dog got lost and they didn't have a chip in it, or the dog was just, you know, abandoned. I don't know what the story is. I don't think anybody does. But maybe we'll get more. Maybe something will come out. Maybe somebody.
Oh yeah, I mean the story's
got
to the point where someone will recognize that dog
because they found the guy who came up. So there was a guy in the middle of the night who was walking by at 3 a.m. or whatever the time was. You see in the security footage walking by and sees their door open, and is like, he's like looking in, like, why is the door open? What's going on? You can see him like jump up above like the stoop, and then goes up and shuts the door.
I mean, just thankfully for them, a nice guy was walking by and not a friggin' psychopath who would go in there and steal or murder.
Yeah. I mean, you'd hope that the percentages of a nice person were walking by than the percentages of a psychopath, but it goes
not at
down
4 o'clock
when
in the morning.
3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Yeah. So yes, that was just the whole chain of events. The fact that it was caught on camera is amazing. And now that they have like all the pieces to the story of how things went down in the middle of the night.
I really encourage you to go on his Twitter page because he documents everything in the timeline. And then there's a video it was sort of summarizing it. It's an amazing story. Twitchy was joking like, you're living a Lifetime movie. You're living a Lifetime Christmas movie.
It's unbelievable how this happened.
Santa Paws. They actually named the dog Susan Pawman because the dog is a girl. So
Susan Putman.
Yeah. I like Pawman. Anyway.
I do too.
It is like one of those tacky Lifetime Christmas movies where it's like the dog magically appears and now they have a new best friend. Now they have a newborn and two dogs, which is just crazy.
Yeah, it's the fact that this happened to JJ is...
I don't know if I would have been selfless enough to take on this dog. I mean, I would have certainly taken care of the dog and tried to like find it something. But I don't know if I would have adopted this dog because not because I'm a piece of shit, but because I have a newborn.
Well, maybe it's because you're a piece of shit.
I feel like the newborn takes precedent.
Well, I think they're in a different situation too, where they have they do have some time off coming up with the baby and some leave, and also JJ works from home, so there's a difference in it, I think, scenario and maybe some the ability to take on something like that. It's very nice the fact that they're getting this dog back up, and I know he was. He opened up his Venmo and for people
for
to donate for like the health of the dog as well. And they've raised, you know, a good amount of money, and he's going to donate whatever left over to a
cause. Isn't it amazing what people will donate to dogs? And I agree. I donated as well because I think it's an extremely sad situation, and it's a nice thing that they're doing, taking care of the dog.
Yeah.
So it's something.
It's crazy. It's crazy how the whole thing went down. It really is. And they found the guy, and apparently JJ is going to meet up with him at some point. But that'll be interesting. I want to hear the
Hopefully
story of the guy,
Yankees
too,
fan.
Now.
Yeah. Wild story for out of left field. Maybe one of us will do something weird over the next week to bring up on next week's podcast. Any last words before we get out of here?
No, just keep an eye out for the NYC hat that's going to be dropping this week, as well as the Top Hat beanies. Again, I will be able to get those all out to you guys before Christmas. So if you're looking for an additional awesome gift, that's definitely one to circle, and we'll get them out. And then, yeah, plan. If you're planning on going to spring training, again, don't wait.
It's St. Paddy's Day weekend.
For St. Paddy's Day weekend, we will be there.
That sounded like that sounded like a T.
Big D. It was a hard D.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.